how you've been programmed without even knowing that you've been programmed. What you listen to, music videos that you see, the athletes, the celebrities and shit that you follow, what the fucking these politicians say, what the news says, the anything that is fed to you is basically there to get you to think a certain way.
Welcome to the Ronin Mindset Podcast. My name is Steve Didier. Today we have the one and only BP, Brian Ponciano. How you doing, brother?
I am fucking amazing. How you doing?
I'm about the same, bro. I'm in Thailand and I don't hate it.
Yeah. I didn't hate it when I was in Thailand either, so.
Where'd you go in Thailand?
I went through
the whole tour? Or?
No, I only had 2 weeks there, so I spent a week in Bangkok. And then a week down in Phuket.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to go up to check out Chiang Mai, where you're at. I didn't get a chance to go up to that part of Thailand. But, you know, they call it the land of a thousand smiles. And it's really fitting. The people are genuinely some of the nicest, most happy, genuine people I've ever fucking met in my life. And their food is incredible.
100%. Yeah, I'm loving it. People, and that's one of the biggest things that you notice here, and you probably notice the same thing, is like there's a genuine level of respect deeply embedded in the culture.
Yes. I feel that Americans don't have that, you know? And one of the things that I love to travel, or one of the reasons why I love to travel so much, is because, like, so I am proud to be born an American. I'm grateful for the opportunities that I received in this country. With that being said, though, because I do travel a lot, I see that the flip side of that coin, which is what we have here in security and opportunity and in infrastructure, we lose when it comes to living life. And when you go to other countries like Thailand, they know how to live life. They may not have, you know, running water all the time, or their electricity goes on and out, or, you know, they may be what we consider poverty here in the U.S., but they are genuinely happy and they just know how to live life more.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Even in the bigger cities, like I'm in Chiang Mai, like 1.2 million people of the busy road down here. I never hear horns honking. Nobody's getting aggro. There's no road rage. It's respect. I mean, the security guard at the mall, like I said hi to him on my way out, he like full out saluted me.
Like, only time that you hear honking out there is people to let you know that they're coming around the corner. Like because as Americans, once again, this is the American bullshit, right? As Americans, when we hear honking, that fuck you, motherfucker, get the fuck out. Like it's an aggressive type of honking. Versus, in every other country that I've been to, bro, and I've been to Africa, I've been to fucking the Middle East, I've been to Southeast Asia, I've been to Latin America, all over the fucking place. The honking is not aggressive. It's just like, beep, beep, I'm around the corner, beep, hey, watch out right here, bro. It's not like, fuck you, motherfucker, get the fuck out of my way. Fuck, man.
Yeah, it's so refreshing. Because where are you right now? You in Phoenix?
I'm in Phoenix at the moment. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because you were in Africa, Brazil, not too long ago.
Yeah, I was in Brazil. So I have a tradition where I travel to a new country every year for my birthday. It's been going. This is my 8th year that I've been doing it, and I travel by myself to a new country, preferably somewhere where I don't know anybody, preferably somewhere where I don't know the language. So this time it happened to be Brazil, and I was out there for 2 weeks. Loved it so much that I'll be back there next month. I'll be back in Brazil. So.
From some of those pictures I saw you posting on social media, I don't blame you at all.
Y'all can fill in the blanks for that one.
Yeah. What part of Brazil were you in?
I went to Sao Paulo. That's where I stayed. Then I went to Rio because my whole intention was to be in Rio for my birthday. The city of Rio has such a special meaning to me. My dad was a super soccer fan growing up. His favorite team was Brazil. Rio has a big, beautiful stadium out there that's very famous for, and their beaches and their landscape is just gorgeous, and the women are just amazing. So I went over there, and then after Rio, I went up to Manaus, which is the city in the Amazon, because I was like, yo, I've been to Africa. I've been to the Nile River. It'd be stupid for me to be in Brazil and not go to the Amazon River. So I went up and I spent about a week in the Amazon River. It was fun.
Hit any psychedelics or ayahuasca while you were there?
Fuck yeah, bro. I took some fucking... So I didn't do any, like, I didn't go to, like, a ceremony or whatever, but I did take some mushrooms with me. You know, I have a...
Okay.
I have some... I take them in capsules. They're grounded. They look like fucking any other type of herbal pill. So anyway, I took some while I was in the Amazon because I wanted to feel the energy from the river even more. And by the way, you could feel it without the psychedelics, right? I didn't take a lot. I think I took like a gram and a half or something. It was just enough to kind of get me there, but not really take me past that. And honestly, it was a great way to connect with the river. I ended up taking, you know, I ended up meeting somebody over there. She was showing me around. I hired an Uber driver one time and she took me to these cool little waterfalls and this river portion of everything. And like, oh man, it was amazing. It was amazing for sure. So yeah.
That's so badass, man. I haven't been to Brazil, but that's on the short list for sure.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. The, you know, obviously everybody knows Brazil because of their beautiful women, and their women are beautiful. The great thing about Brazil is that it's really all mixed. So you can find from blonde hair, blue eye woman to a dark, you know, darker than dark, straight out of Africa woman. But most of their people out there are very mixed. And mixed people in general are very good looking. Now, outside of the good looking people, though, the culture is super nice, super friendly. You know, I had a lot of people told me, hey, be careful with São Paulo. It's dangerous, especially in the downtown area. I didn't feel any of that shit, bro. I was going everywhere. I didn't feel any threatened. I didn't feel anybody casing me. I didn't feel any type of threatening in any way whatsoever in any of the places that I went to. So anyway, the people are just genuinely nice. Their culture is super fun. They love to dance and they love to kind of go all over. And honestly, bro, this is what you find in most other parts of the world. As I said, in America, we're used to being kind of like, you know, you go to the gym. You go to the grocery store, nobody's saying hi. Everybody's in their own little fucking world. They got their headphones on. They're looking there. When you go to these other countries, it's a lot more, the human nature aspect of it is a lot more than what you find here in the United States.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you 100%. And like you were saying about people, oh, be careful in São Paulo. You know, I did the same thing when I moved to Mexico. Everybody's like, oh, dude, you're going to die. You're going to get killed.
Oh my God.
You know, isn't that the way it is? You know, because Americans especially, they listen to the news so much. And then you actually get there. I mean, I've heard all the stories about Brazil. I spent 3 weeks in Colombia by myself. I lived in Mexico by myself. And it's funny because Mexicans were like, oh my God, you're going to Colombia? That's dangerous. And then the Colombians are like, oh, what? You live in fucking Mexico? That's dangerous. I was like...
And it's so crazy,
like,
how much we are influenced and programmed by the news, by society, and by any of that stuff. And, you know, this is why I was very, you know, when we talked about coming on the podcast, I was definitely down for it because I am a big advocate against going against the grain, particularly when it comes to social norms, specifically when it comes to social norms. Because everybody's a fucking idiot. So guys, let me tell you on something. There is no such thing as a fucking adult. Remember when you were a kid and you thought that like, oh yeah, once I become an adult, oh yeah, the adults know what they're talking about. They know what they're doing. Dude, nobody knows what the fuck they're doing. Nobody knows. Now that includes your teachers. That includes politicians. That includes any fucking leader.
Especially your teachers and politicians. Yes. Especially.
It's all part of the same bullshit, you know? And it's really there to keep you in line. One of the easiest ways to control people is by fear.
Fear.
So like, you know, we haven't got into it, but we'll talk about it a bit. I do real estate investing by trade. So that's what I do. I've been a real estate investor for the last 17 years. I've never met a motherfucker out there who doesn't want to invest in real estate in one form or another. I'm talking about doctors, lawyers, athletes, actors, all of these people. I've never met any person who doesn't want to be involved in real estate in one way or the other. Now, your average Joe, people that I went to high school with, people that I meet in this, they'd be like, man, dude, I would love to do that. And I'm like, well, why don't you? Number one thing out of their mouth is blah, 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 fear. Whatever way they face it. My family, my car, my kids. Exactly. It's a risky market. You know, everybody's doing it. I'm not sure. But the reality is that that's all fear-based. And the people that put the fear in us is usually society. Sometimes even our parents. And, you know, our parents think they're helping us. They think that they're kind of protecting us. But in reality, all they're really doing is putting their insecurities, their fear mindset into your mindset and fucking us up, really.
Yeah, they're embedding it. And that's the mindset that is tough to get out of. When you're programmed like that from childhood with that fear-based programming and all that, it's tough to unfuck yourself.
Yeah. And that's honestly why I created a mindset program called Unfuck Your Mindset.
See where I was going with that?
Yeah. I appreciate that. I appreciate the softball, bro. I saw that alley-oop. I had to dunk it.
Right there, baby.
One of the things that I realized, though, is that, look, whether we want to admit it or not, we're all fucked up in the head. In one way or the other. And it's not a bad thing, by the way, guys. It's not a bad thing. It's not like, you know, oh, I'm so fucked up and you need to like beat yourself up over it. It's not a bad thing. However, though, you have to understand that the way that you got fucked up had nothing to do with you. It was other people's opinions. It was other people's fears. It was other people's insecurities. So you got a fucking teacher who's making, what do they make now, $40,000 a year on average or whatever, the school teachers? Let's call it $50,000 a year on average, which I'm pretty sure it's less
something than that. Something horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. I don't know. So I actually wanted to be a school teacher. And one of the best advice that somebody told me, I said, hey, why don't you work at a school for a year as a teacher's assistant and see if you really like it? Oh, my God. I'm so glad I did that.
Did you do it? I did.
Because I was going to go to college and I was going to go study to be a teacher. When I found out how little they make, when I found out all the bullshit that they have to deal with, when I found out all the extra work that they do that they don't get paid for, and then having to deal not only with the parents, because the parents were fucking horrible to deal with, but then the other teachers, the administrators, the school system, bro, like, it was horrible. Now, you got somebody that doesn't really like their life, is barely getting by, is overworked, underappreciated, and that person has one of the biggest influences in you as a child, as a kid. Mm-hmm. Yo, like, they fuck you up. And even if that's not their intention.
Yeah, even if it's not their intention. And we can get into that and what's going on nowadays. But even if it's not their intention, they implant all that stuff into you. And it's not like they, you know, my mom was a teacher. I respect the way it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They were paid fairly. It seemed like the teachers were there because they wanted to help raise students correctly. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
No. There was
more of a program situation.
When I was working there, I was working with the upper half of the elementary school, so fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. And there was a kid, I forget his fucking name, but he was a bad kid, like bad to the bone type kid, you know? And anyway, I remember that at the end of the year, the teacher failed him because he just got D's and F's throughout this whole fucking thing. Like, he was just really bad as a student and just misbehaved and everything else. His mom came and she bitched at this teacher and then signed the paperwork to move him up to sixth grade anyway. And the little kid, like, that motherfucker walked by us like with a little smirk, like, what you gonna do about it? Like, what type of adult is that going to raise?
Yeah, it's going to be the entitled, playing the victim card, thinking everything's going to be given to them, and there's no consequences whether they do good or bad.
Well, and like you said, when your mom was a teacher, it was more of a symbiotic relationship between, like, the teacher and the parent. The teacher would tell the parent, hey, little Jimmy was cussing, and the parent would be like, motherfucker, I'm going to beat your ass when you get home.
Right.
Now, it's like, hey, little Jimmy got detention, and the mom or the dad's like, what the fuck you mean? My kid doesn't do any of that. Like, you're fucking stupid, teacher. And it creates a bad imbalance. But as I said, a lot of those things have been programmed to us. And one of the things that I want you guys to pay attention here is the fact that how you've been programmed without even knowing that you've been programmed. What you listen to, music videos that you see, the athletes, the celebrities and shit that you follow, what the fuck can these politicians say, what the news says, anything that is fed to you is basically there to get you to think a certain way. And yep. even with free flow of information that we have now, meaning that you can go to YouTube, nobody tells you what to look in YouTube. Now they suggest because they want to continue putting that down, but you can search whatever you want. Even then, even with that power to search whatever you want, people still celebrity gossip, athlete news, kitty cats fucking turning and, you know, playing with the little ball or whatever the fuck. That's the shit that most people go. And honestly, guys, whether we like to admit it or not, we've been programmed there, which is why most people are not doing what they want, are not with the person they want to be, are not living the life that they want, following their dreams because they've been programmed. Don't stop it. Grow up. Get out of it. Get the fuck out of here. That's not going to work for you. Go get a real job. Go. What are you doing? Why are you traveling to another part of the world? America's the best. Why would you ever leave?
Yep. It's absolutely mind-boggling when you start to become aware of those things, aware of all the influences, especially when you're younger, that kind of created the mindset that we have.
Yep.
Becoming aware is the first part of getting out of it.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, start paying attention to the influences in your life.
It's a four-step process, and I actually get into this in my program, but I'll give you guys the four steps. Step number one is awareness. So you can't fix a problem unless you're aware the problem is there, right? Step number two is understanding, which is you have to understand where that problem came from, and you have to understand how it's affecting your life. Step number three is disassociation. So I got to actually get a rip that old negative thought, you know, this limiting belief away from me. And then number four is reprogramming, which is now I got to replace that old programming with something new. Most people do one and two just fine, meaning that they are aware they have a problem. They understand where it came from. However, the hardest part for most people is number three. Disassociation. Can you stop talking to the motherfuckers that tell you you're never going to be anything? Can you stop talking to the people that say your business is never going to work? Can you stop talking? Yo, isn't it funny? And you know, because you've traveled the world, the majority of the people that give you advice about not to travel don't even have a fucking passport.
Thank you. Yeah, the ones who say that I'm going to get killed going across the border, I shouldn't go here. They don't even have a fucking passport.
Like, how would
it's kind of like it's an extension of that, the saying you'll never find a hater that's doing better than you.
Yeah,
you know,
100%. So I was fortunate enough to always ask questions as a little kid. And that got me into a lot of trouble at school. That got me into a lot of trouble with my parents. My parents were very religious people, evangelical Christians, you know, down to the T and stuff, right? So anything that was, when I was a kid, I wasn't able to listen to any music that didn't say Jesus in it. Like anything that like my friends were, I couldn't watch any of that. I couldn't read comic books. I couldn't read like the Goosebumps books and stuff like that because they were just like about demons and monsters. So they were very, very strict on that end. Then they came from, you know, they came from poverty. So to them, the American dream was like real. And you have to go to college and you have to get a job and you have to get a career. And then you're going to go all of that. Now, I say all of that because as I've been asking questions, I learned throughout the time, listen to the people who you want to be like. And I remember this vividly, bro. I had just quit my last corporate job that I was ever working. This was like 15 or so years ago. I was making about $80,000 a year, including commission, which was decent for some guy that didn't even fucking graduate college and shit, right? So I was doing okay for myself. I was doing way better than my parents. And when I told them, hey, I'm quitting to jump into real estate, they thought I was fucking stupid. Now, they didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. And when I sat there, I love my parents. I love my dad. I love my mom. I respect them. I respect what they did. I respect their sacrifices to get me to the position where I can be better than they are. So when I say what I say, I don't mean any disrespect. But when I looked at it and in my head, they're telling me that this is not going to work. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, mom, you clean toilets. Dad, you drive a school bus. You know, who the fuck are you to tell me what a successful business looks like? And it's not anything against them. It was just like they were never in that position to experience that. And so their opinions came from just other people's influences, usually society and anything else. And like we talked about in the beginning of this, the easiest way to control people is to scare them. And that's the easiest way to influence people is if you say, hey, this could go bad, that could go bad.
Right. Where? Okay, let's back up a little bit. Where did your parents immigrate from? Where did you grow up?
Sure. So my parents were both born and raised in Guatemala City. They, my grandpa came to the States many years ago. This was like in the 50s or 60s where he came. And at that point, they would give you a social security card if you worked here long enough. I don't remember what it is. But anyway, he had a social. And my dad had the same name as his dad. So when he ended up impregnating my mom at the age of like 18 or so, he decided that he was going to come to America to work. And then he was going to, you know, he was going to get us over there or whatever. So I was fortunate enough to be born in this country. My mom, you know, he had brought my mom into the country before I was born and they were able to have here. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to do that. But nonetheless, through situations, my mom and myself and my little brother ended up back in Guatemala. And then we were able to come back. So anyway, they immigrated to a small town in Louisiana, right outside of Lafayette. It's called Abbeville. Anyway, so they immigrated there for a bit. They worked for a little bit. And then my dad's brother lived in Los Angeles. So he said, hey, y'all should come out there. I must have been like one or so. But anyway, we grew up in the, you know, we grew up in the hoods of Los Angeles. I grew up in a town called Southgate. Southgate was literally across the train tracks from Compton. I think a lot of people have heard of Compton because of, you know, like the West Coast music and shit. So Compton, Inglewood, like that was literally right across the train tracks. Watts, where they had the Watts riots and shit. The Rodney King riots were something that I lived. So we, the street, the main street that got hit for during the Rodney King riots is called Firestone. We used to drive from Southgate to Inglewood every fucking, like literally we were at church 5-6 days a week. So we would drive every time through Firestone. So we saw the whole thing. We went there. My uncle's house was actually in South Central, and it got to the point where he had to move all his valuable shit to our house just because we didn't know how bad the riots were going to get and if they were going to start breaking into people's houses. So, yeah, I grew up drugs, gangs, violence. It was a rough neighborhood, bro. And, you know, my parents, they weren't there because they liked it. They were just there because that's what they could afford. You know, you got immigrant parents coming in. Yeah. And as I, you know, my parents, my dad did study English and he did kind of better himself. My mom never really wanted to study English. She just wanted to continue living that life. So my dad was able to make more money eventually. But during that time, we were pretty poor. We were living in this, you know, in this neighborhood where it was pretty rough. Everybody around me was involved in gangs. Very rarely was.
I was going to say, in that time, in that area of LA, in those years, I mean, it was heavy, heavy, heavy gang activity.
I remember seeing my first gang fight, my first gang-related fight, where these two kids fought because they were from opposing gangs. I was like in the third grade. Oh, shit. The number one question that I would get asked walking around my school is, "Where are you from?" Which means, "What gang are you affiliated with?" Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was so common, so prevalent. Hell, where we lived was like this. It was this house. It used to be a big house that they turned into like a fourplex right across the street from that. And it wasn't like a main street. It was just like a neighborhood street right across the street from that was like a 8-plex or a 10-plex. I don't remember. But every single person that lived in that building was part of the same gang. And the neighbor kid was my age. And he actually, their parents were friends with my parents from back in Guatemala. So we knew each other. We grew up together, right? That kid, Marlon, I believe was his name. He, when he was like, because my parents took me out of there when I was 14. And I was going down the same road. You know, I was kind of talking more to the gang members and I was kind of hanging out with them. And, you know, they call you a peewee. You're not really in the gang. You're kind of just like hanging out with the people in the gang and kind of like grooming you to be in the gang, right? Well, anyway, Marlon ended up getting in the gang, yeah, with the neighbors across the street, and it went pretty bad. You know, the dad finally had to like beg the gang members to let his kid out of the gang, and they said, "Well, you only leave here, you know, in debt or in jail." But you know, the kid was like 16 or so they said, "We'll do you a favor. We'll beat his ass so bad that he never wants to fucking come back." And they beat the fuck out of that fucking kid, bro. Like, and this was everyday fucking life. You know, his dad was in a gang. His dad, you know, they worked good and they made decent money. They just, it was a rough life, bro. It was a rough life.
It's very tough to get along at that time in those areas. It's very tough to get along as a young guy and not become affiliated. It's just almost a matter of survival.
Yeah, because the thing was that if you were not, and this is where I get pissed off at all of these people, mainly Americans, mainly white people that say, hey, why don't you pull yourself out of your bootstraps? You know, like if you just didn't get into the gang, life wouldn't have been different. And I, even though that makes 100% logical sense, when you are growing up in those neighborhoods, if you're not affiliated with a gang, that means that anybody can fuck with you and there's no repercussions. Mm-hmm. So they can rob you, they can punk you, they can, you know, whatever, harass you, and there's no repercussions for them. So a lot of times when you come from those environments, especially like I was lucky enough to have my father in the house. I tell people all the time that I was upper or lower class. You know, we both, like, I had both my father and my mother. They both worked. My dad wasn't a gang member. He wasn't a druggie. He wasn't a drunk. Like, you know, we were just regular fucking people. But that gave me a leg up versus the other people that were there. Now, if you're a young man living in that society and you don't have a fucking dad, like, now you're looking for a father figure. And it's almost, the odds are so stacked against you. Yes, you could grow up there and not ever be involved in a gang. But the odds are so stacked against you because of the, once again, the societal pressures that are coming out.
Yeah, no, the deck is stacked against you. And all the statistics out there, especially young men growing up in single mother households,
yes,
off the charts. I mean, it's almost like across the board, 80, 90% of the people in prison, single mother households, rapes, assaults, everything down the board because they don't have that father figure. And that may be, like you said, that leg up.
Look, so I love my mom. I love my dad. I always knew that my dad could have done better than my mom. And I always knew that he just stayed with her because he had knocked her up and he had grown up without a dad. So he was like, my kids aren't going to grow up without a dad. But in regards to, like, you know, your traditional housewife or whatever, my mom was not that. She was always a tomboy, and her and my dad were always having conflicts for that. He wanted her to be more of a, like, traditional woman. She wanted to be more like a tomboyish, and they were always kind of having issues, right? Not to the point where they were, like, physical or arguing, but you could just tell there was friction. I say that because if my dad hadn't been there, bro, we would have been fucked. Financially, we would have been fucked. Like, they were both not good with money, but my dad was better with money than my mom. The discipline, my mom would have not been able to control us. Like, that just, it would have been insane. And remember, if she would have been living in LA as a single mother, she probably would have had to been working two jobs, maybe three jobs, just to keep the fucking light on.
You'd have been,
which means we would have been
out of your own devices,
doing whatever the fuck we were going
to
do.
It wouldn't have led to anything good.
No, not at all. And I mean, even with a dad there, I almost fell down that path. And honestly, I think, you know, my dad being a risk taker, because he, for all his flaws or whatever, he always was the type of guy that he's going to do what he thinks is right, regardless of who thinks is fucking stupid. So when he told his family and his friends and everybody, hey, I'm moving to Arizona, everybody's like, Phoenix, that place sucks. What are you going to do over there? Like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm so glad that we came here, because I was literally like this close to going down that path.
Well, so like we talked about at the beginning, you know, the influences you have when you're younger, it's not like you are around a bunch of people who are talking stocks and investing and real estate and coming up in life. You didn't have those sorts of influences in your life. How did you make that mindset switch given that upbringing and that's those surroundings when you were younger, and flip it over to the successful guy that you are now? Because, you know, like, I had heard a little bit about you before we met and all this. I know what you've accomplished in real estate and stuff like that. And that's one of the kind of cool things about you, to look at you, nobody's ever going to be like, oh yeah, that guy's fucking rich. You know,
I love that.
You know, it's great. It's great. And you've achieved a lot of success in real estate. So how did you make that transition from growing up in a neighborhood and around influences like that, and then switch over to the success mindset that you have? Do you have a mentor or somebody come into your life that explained how to make that transition, or is it something you discovered on your own?
Both. You can only take yourself. So you can trial and error this shit to get you to anywhere. right? I mean, you own a business where you do credit repair. Now, I don't know shit about credit repair, but if given enough time and enough energy, I could figure it out with the videos online and trial and error and whatever the fuck else, right? So there was a lot of that because growing up, I just didn't have the right influences there. I said my dad was a good dad or whatever, but he didn't know anything about the business world or anything. So when I was 18, I started, that's when I started working for the school. And then I started going to different, I would always see these classified ads and they ended up being like Amway and all these other multi-level marketing companies. So I was always looking for business opportunities. I was always looking to find a way to get started. At that point, I didn't really have any money, so I never really joined any of those companies. But what I kept on hearing every single time I went to one of these meetings, somebody on stage was talking about, you know, your mindset. It's the way you think. It's got nothing to do with the product. It's got nothing to do with the weather. It's got nothing to do with the economy. It's all the way you think. It's all the way you think. It's all the way you think. So at some point, I started realizing that, man, I'm constantly thinking negative and I'm constantly doing this. I need to change that. And I must have been, fuck, bro. I must have been 21. Yeah, right around 21 at the time. And honestly, bro, I was just being funny. So I walked down to my local Circle K and I said, hey, how you doing? I'm buying some beer or whatever. And it just dawned on me that every time you ask somebody, hey, how you doing? They're like, oh, I'm good. And then you respond back, oh, yeah, I'm good, too. And it was just kind of boring. So I was just trying to shock the fucking person. I was just trying to, you know, I'd gone to the same Circle K for a while. I was just trying to fuck with the person. And they're like, how you doing? And I'm like, dude, I'm fucking great. And I just smiled and I looked at them and they were just so dumbfounded by that answer. I started doing it again and again and again and again and again. Now, mind you, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Like, it wasn't like I did it on purpose or anything. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was just doing it over and over and over again. About a year and a half, 2 years later, I'm having a conversation with my friend and they're talking about having a bad day. And I'm like, dude, I haven't had a bad day and I don't even know. And I start thinking about it. And I'm like, fuck, it's been about 2 years.
Shit.
And so anyway, I was, like I said, I was doing it unconsciously at that point. At some point, I started networking more. I really started just getting out because I wanted to be around other business owners. I wanted to be around other people that thought the way that I did. I had been introduced to real estate. I had been knocking on doors for an investor, trying to get leads. You know, I got a lot of people telling me, go fuck yourself, and guns pointed at me and all kinds of shit. But like, whatever, I kept on doing it. I started kind of getting around those people. And I said, I want to be around more of these people. As I went to one of those events, I ended up meeting my mentor, who was an old Jewish man, and he basically broke it down to me. This is how your mind works. This is science. This is not like foo-foo shit. Like, the law of attraction is an actual law, and here's how it works. And this is how you put out that energy in your mind, and this is how you replicate. And do you want to know why you always get what you don't want and why you don't get what you want? Well, let me break it down to you. And fuck, man. I mean, that guy changed my fucking life. Think about the game of basketball. You know, like, if you don't know shit about basketball, let's say you grew up in a completely different country and you don't know anything about the game of fucking basketball. Mm-hmm. If you watch it for a few minutes, you're going to quickly understand that you win by putting the ball in the hoop. Like, that part of it is understandable.
Yep.
However, you don't know the rules of the game. You don't know strategies. You don't understand how it really works. You don't understand a trick play and a triangle and a double dribble and a three-pointer and all the pick and rolls and all the other shit that happens in that game, right?
Right.
You just understand that the ball goes into the hoop. Well, that's what people normally have with mindset because they don't truly understand how it works. And remember when I did what I did with, you know, just saying I'm fucking great, I'm fucking great, I'm fucking great, I knew that the ball went in the hoop. Like, I knew saying that stuff made things better for me, but I just didn't really understand how and why. And it wasn't until my mentor really taught me how to do that.
Now, did you meet him through real estate?
No, it was just at a normal networking event. I was doing something in real estate to make ends meet. And I just went to networking events to meet other business owners. I just really wanted to be around other business owners. And I was running a marketing company at that time, like I said, to try to make ends meet while I was starting in real estate. So I figured that a room of other business owners is probably a good place to be if I'm running a marketing company.
There are worse places you could put yourself.
And, you know, like I ended up getting business from that place or whatever. But the biggest gift that I got was meeting my mentor, Jeff, for sure.
Yeah. How long did you work with him?
14 years, something like that. So we literally, I mean, we worked together because he used to have weekly classes here in the Phoenix area. And we did it all the way till COVID happened. And then they shut down the area that we were doing. The guy whose office we were using was inside of the Paradise Valley Mall. So they ended up closing all the shopping malls. And then after COVID, the whole mall got shut down anyway. So my mentor, you know, he's in his mid-60s at the moment. And it was just something that he was doing because he enjoyed doing it. So after COVID, he just stopped. But I want to say it was about 12 to 14 years that I went there every Tuesday that I was in town, every Tuesday for 90 minutes. We went over the same book. He went over the same information, just repetitive listening to the same stuff over and over.
Here's a $1 million question. For somebody listening who may not be in the best place in life, whether they're financially down and out, or they lost everything, or they're growing up in a bad situation, or whatever their situation surrounding is. How would you advise somebody to go about finding a mentor?
Okay. So think about what you want. So like, what would you like in life? Right? Right. Let's say that you're one of these people down and out right now, business sucks, relationship sucks, whatever. Find somebody that is in the position that you want to be, and that's a good place to start. Now, I want to warn you, though, that you're going to have different mentors for different things. So if you're down and out on money right now and you're having shitty relationships, the guy that teaches you or the girl that teaches you how to make money doesn't necessarily is going to be a good relationship teacher. And you know, vice versa, the person that teaches you how to be in a good relationship and appreciate your husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend better, you know, they may not be as financially successful in the industry that you want to be. So the answer to that question is find the people that you want to be like. And here's the important part. Find a way to add value to them. Because one of the things that happens as somebody who is successful myself, and like I said, I'm in real estate, everybody and their fucking mama wants to be in real estate. The amount of people throughout the years that have came to me, asking me, begging me for help, and just expecting help, like expecting that I'm just going to drop everything that I'm doing just to try to fucking help them out. I'm like, motherfucker, I don't even know you. Like, I wouldn't do that shit for somebody that I know. The fuck you think I'm going to do that for somebody? And a lot of times people come to you with handout, give me information, give me time, give me attention. For you guys that don't know, when you are successful, your time is more valuable than money because you know how to make money. You don't want to waste your fucking time. But here's the thing, guys, is if you come in showing them, hey, how can I add value to you? I don't have anything. I don't have any money right now, but what can I do? Can I go fucking help you out? Can I clean the fucking yard? Whatever, like any of those things that you can do is going to add value to what they're doing. And as you add value to them, then they start noticing that, hey, this guy or girl, they actually mean it. Because here's the thing is if you're successful, you're like any other human. You're going to want to share your information. Mm-hmm. You're going to want to help somebody.
To people who are going to appreciate it.
Actually do it and appreciate it. Yes.
Yep.
Because mind you, right, if you're getting hit up by 100 different people a day, can you help me? Can you help me? Can you help me? And you actually try, as you said, the percentage of the people that actually appreciate it and furthermore, even actually take any steps to it, mm-hmm. are fucking tiny, tiny minimal.
It every step of the way. I had people when I still had the credit repair business, I had people hitting me up all the time on Instagram and everything else like, hey, bro, I need you to help me get set up in a credit repair business. I'm like, I need to help you? Curious approach. How about, you know, hey, is there anything that I'll work for you or can I help you? I want to learn the business. Or, you know, like you said, come from a position of, hey, what can I do to help you? Where can I you know, how can I add value to your life or in your business? And in return, I can learn for that.
But you know, one of the tips that I learned from real estate, particularly in the beginning, is learn how to make other people money and then find a way to get paid in between, you know, somewhere in that transaction. But learn how to make other people money. Because if I approach you and I'm like, Steve, yo, man, I need you to let me borrow $100,000 so I can do this one deal, which is going to net me a ton of money. You're going to be like, okay, well, what the fuck is that? Like, whatever. But if I'm like, yo, Steve, I need you to let me borrow $100,000 because I'm doing this deal and I'll be able to pay you a 12% return on your money, which is what I pay my fucking lenders. Like, you're like, well, 12%, fuck me. Like, shit, that's way better than the stock market, to this, to that, to there. I am incentivizing you to want to do it because now there's something in it for you versus the other way around. So it, to add, like I said, to answer your question is you have to find the people that you want to be like, and then you have to approach them humbly. Preferably with how the fuck can I add value to you? Whatever way, like I said, I'll work for you for free. I'll do all the grunt work. I'll do all the bullshit. Like, I just want you to know that I'm serious. Once those people know that you're serious, they, you know, they will help you. They will literally help you. It's just a lot of times we don't want to waste our time with people that are going to waste our fucking time.
I know. I remember when I was in Vegas and it was after the market had crashed and I didn't have any, you know, I had lost everything. And I was getting into real estate investing, and I had, you know, through my connections and my, you know, experience, I had connections with asset managers in the banks. I could get properties all day long. I just couldn't capitalize them because I didn't have the money. And like you said, I didn't go find somebody, hey, you need to give me some money so I could go buy this house. I was like, hey, look, because I had a couple of real estate investors I'd worked with. I made them a ton of money just by finding the properties when I was being a regular real estate agent. So I approached them, like you said, humbly. I said, hey, look, you know what? With the market and everything, I ended up in a position where I can't finance this myself, but I know you're where you're at, but I can find properties. If you supply the money, I'll supply the people to fix. We'll go 50-50 on it. All you got to do is write the money. You'll get paid half the profits. And guess what? Yep. Every single one of them jumped at the chance.
Of course. Why wouldn't they? You've already made them a ton of money.
Yep. They knew how I worked. They knew how I operated as a real estate agent. So they knew what I was coming to the table with was solid. And even if they hadn't known me, at least I could have said, hey, you know what? I know you don't know me, but let me bring you a sample property. I'll show you the numbers that I have on it. You tell me if it's something that you think looks legit.
And the thing is, guys, this is, you can do this in whatever industry it is that you want to do. When I started working real estate investing, I was working for free. It was a commission based only. My boss, who wasn't even a boss, he was just a real estate investor. He was like, look, bro, if you're willing to put in the work, this shit can make money. I don't know when the fuck you're going to make money, but if once we actually lock up a deal and we sell it, then, you know, we'll make some money. And I door knocked for 6 to 9 months. For you guys that don't know what that is here's a list of pre-foreclosures right here. You're like, boop, boop, boop. Hey, Steve, how you doing today? You're losing your house. Would you be interested in selling it? That's what I said. And because I was Hispanic and I speak Spanish, he would send me to all the ghetto neighborhoods here in Phoenix, right? All the Marybells in Phoenix and shit.
Even better.
So that's where I got all the guns pointed at me and go fuck yourself, motherfucker. And I'm not losing my house. You don't know what I'm talking about. But I did that for free. Like, literally, I paid for my gas. I paid for this. I paid for everything else. I had a side hustle that I was doing just so I can get to the point where I was able to do business.
Yep.
Now, from me doing that, whenever I needed something, any of those people that I worked with in that space, I could always reach back to. And some of those people I still do business with to today. Mm-hmm. That was 17, 16 years ago or something.
Which you put in the work. And they knew.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that, like, I was willing to come in humbly. I knew that I didn't know anything. And that's where a lot of people fuck up when they're looking for a mentor. But here's the thing, is if you can show somebody that, hey, I'm here humbly. I don't know anything. I'm all ears. I'm all open. I'm going to shut my fucking trap and just listen to what you say and then actually do what you tell me to do. Yep. Man, that person, that guy or girl is going to go out of their way to help you, because every mentor wants a mentee. Every fucking person, you know, it doesn't matter where you're at. Once you reach a certain level of success, every single one of them, it's inherent in us as humans mm-hmm. to pass that information on to somebody else.
100%. That is really, really good advice, because a lot of people say they'll play that victim card, be like, oh, well, my circumstances are different, or I didn't come from money, or whatever the fuck it is. Like, it's good for people to hear stuff like that, because it's that mindset that gets you from point A to point B, but you got to want it.
And that's where a lot of people fuck up, is because, you know, when you start from wherever you start, first of all, I don't even know you, but I can promise you that there is somebody who had it worse, who is doing way better than you. Mm-hmm. Somebody who had it way worse. It's like that saying, right? Somebody's complaining about having no shoes until they met a man with no feet. Mm-hmm. Like, there's always could be worse. Trust me. Yep. So stop complaining about how bad it is and actually do something about it.
Complaining doesn't really
actually go forward and do something about it.
I think people can use their circumstances to be self-defeatist, or they can use their circumstances to motivate themselves.
Of course. You know, I dealt with racism. Most of my interactions with the police have not been pleasant. There's many stories that I can tell you about all this stuff, but you guys get the point. I could say, well, it's because of racism that blah, 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 blah. It's because I grew up poor in LA. It's because I came from a gang infested neighborhood. It's because my parents were immigrant. Like, I could do all of that, and I can use that as a way to hold me back, or I could become in spite of.
Right.
Because look, guys, whatever the fuck you complain about, like, I'm going to be honest with you. Yes, there is white privilege, but look, there's also brown privilege. Yes, there's male privilege, but there's also female privilege. So whatever the motherfucking thing fits you best, use that shit to your advantage and stop complaining about the shit that holds you back. Cause there's always going to be something. Like I said, if you're a man, like, there's going to be times where just being a woman gets you out of a situation. And you're a man, you're like, ah, go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. If you know, whatever category you fall under, it comes with plus and minuses, but yep. The biggest issue is that most people only focus on their minuses. Mm-hmm. I remember I said, yo, if I could take the same skill sets that it takes to be in a gang and sell drugs and not get caught by the police and all the shit that it takes to do that, if I can just take the same skill sets but change the product, I'll be golden. Mm-hmm. And then that's how I decided to go into real estate, because I'm like, well, if I'm going to do a product, then I want to do a high-end product.
Right, right. Why don't we get paid if you're going to sell something?
But it could work. That could work for anything. You could be selling. You could be hustling shoes. You could be hustling caps. You could be hustling fucking phones and phone cases or whatever the fuck. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It's just not letting that bullshit mindset say, well, it's because I'm a woman, it's because I'm black, it's because I came from the hood, it's because my parents are divorced, it's because my dad molested me. Like, you can always find excuses.
Right.
And somebody told me, and I hope you guys write this shit down, either you find a way or you find an excuse, mm-hmm. but you ain't going to find both.
That boils it down right there. You're going to find a way or you'll find an excuse. And the only person who can decide which way they're going to take is you.
100%. And remember, guys, don't worry about becoming who you are because of your situation. Become who you want to be despite your situation.
There's a story, and it's just real brief. I know I'm going to mess it up, but it's right there. There's like two sons of an alcoholic father. One of them becomes a raging alcoholic just like his dad. The other one becomes successful, rich, and sober. When they ask them, you know, they asked the one, like, why did you become drunk? Why didn't you go a different path? Well, it was like, my dad was a drunk. They asked the son who was successful, well, how'd you become successful? Because my dad was a drunk. That's the motivation.
Exactly. And guys, like I said, it's very easy. Remember how we started this? It's all been programming. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason why, you know, we have what we have right now in the United States, where the division of the country, and like, you can't even disagree with someone. Like, guys, I don't even waste my time fucking voting. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I don't waste my time in any of that bullshit. But if I ever say something that is not 100% this side or 100% that side, somebody's going to get up in arms about it, right?
Yep.
That has been programmed. Yes. Well, that's, and the thing is, that has been programmed. Mm-hmm. And the way that that's been programmed is, instead of you taking responsibility for your actions and where you're at in life, it's easier to blame them, whoever them are. Them could be the immigrants. Them can be the elites. Them could be white people. Them could be women. Them could be the gays, whatever, whoever the fuck you blame, because there's always somebody blaming somebody. Mm-hmm. That has been programmed. And unfortunately for most people, they fall under that. So when you start looking at your life and you want to make a change in your life, a lot of times you end up stopping yourself because you're like, no, it's because, and it's because, and then you start focusing on the bullshit, finding blame on other shit, external shit, versus finding the solution inside of you. Mm-hmm. That's really, really what this all boils down to. Because like I said, you may not be where the fuck you want to be, but that doesn't mean you have to stay there. Now, if you keep on focusing on how bad everything is and how bad and how nothing ever gets better, and it's because you're black and it's because you're a woman and it's because you're a man, it's because blah, blah, blah. Like, if you keep on focusing on that, you're going to get more of that. However, if you search within yourself, you now have the ability to start finding the true answers and start finding ways to do it. You can focus on solutions, yep, or you can focus on problems.
I think it's not. Just a matter of really taking a look at the person in the mirror and being like, you know what? It's up to me. Take 100% full fucking responsibility for your future and your decisions and your success and your failures. And once you do that, things get a lot clearer.
They do. And guys, it's going to be hard in the beginning. Like, let's not bullshit ourselves, because you're in the habit of not doing that, right? You're in the habit of blaming other people. You're in the habit of pointing fingers everywhere else instead of pointing fingers or where you're at. So let's not bullshit ourselves and say, well, all you got to do that, and then, yeah, it changes. Like, no, that's all you got to do. It's just not going to be easy. Right. However, though, once you get past the initial hard part, man, it makes life so much fucking easier once you know who you are, once you know what you're made of. Once you've been through a few tests and you know that, man, it don't matter. Like, if I try this business venture and it doesn't work, well, it's fine. It happened already. What's the worst that can happen? I end up broke. Like, I'm broke right now anyway.
Right. Face the worst, who gives a shit? But then if you can start stacking those little wins, boy, that builds your confidence. You just keep stacking those little wins. And it doesn't have to be big, big stuff either. That's the thing. Just little
wins. That's the thing. It's just gaining clarity with what it is that you want. And then as you're clear where you want to go, don't focus. So for example, like, you're like, hey, that Steve, he looks really fit. He's buff. I want to be as buff as he are. But you know, you happen to be overweight. Like, don't expect to go from that to that overnight or in a week or in a month or fuck, even a year. Right. However, if you just stack the small wins, I made it to the gym 3 times this week. I hadn't been to the gym in 10 fucking years. Let's continue doing that next week. Okay, now we're going 3, 3, 3. Okay, now let's add another day. Okay, now we're doing that. We've only been doing cardio. Let's start throwing in some weights. Let's start making it a little bit tougher. Those little wins start stacking up. And before you know it, man, a few years have gone by and you're a totally different person.
100%. Those little wins, it's like that Japanese philosophy of Kaizen. 1% mm-hmm. better. It's 1% better yep. every day, just a little bit. And that adds up over time. It's like, I know you read a lot too, the compound effect.
Yeah.
Darren Hardy.
We were studying that with the class. And actually in that book, there's a saying that he uses, if it's up to me. Mm-hmm. And this is the hard part for most people when it comes to changing their life, is once again, they're so used to blaming everybody else or other situations or other circumstances. And look, guys, if you believe that whatever you believe, that you're being held down because of fill in the fucking blank, that's going to be true for you. You're going to see it. It's just like when you start, you know, when you're trying to buy a new car and you start all of a sudden, you see the same car and the same model and the same color that you were looking at. It doesn't mean that they weren't there before. It's just you're fucking noticing them right now. Well, the same thing happens with all the bullshit, right? There's always going to be bullshit around you. But if you can learn to switch the mind to start focusing on what could go right, What are the possibilities out there? Yeah, working a job sucks. Yeah, you're never going to fucking even get an apartment working, you know, minimum wage at McDonald's for $15 an hour. So you can focus on that, or you can focus on what other opportunities are there. Which ways can I make money from working from home? How can I start a business? What's the cheapest, easiest way to start a business? Mm-hmm. Search that on YouTube, on Google, instead of watching fucking World Star and whatever fucking other bullshit that they use to distract us. Like, yep. Who gives a fuck how much the Dallas Cowboys threw and how many yards they ran? Like, what the fuck does that do for your life?
Does nothing for my life. I don't give a shit. You know, like,
even if you do give a shit, like, what does that really do for you? And I say that as a lifelong Raiders fan who hasn't watched a game in probably, you know, 4 or 5 years now. But there was a point in my life where I knew everything about them, right? All the fucking players, all the stats. I never missed a fucking game. Like, I was die hard. Yep. Fan of the Raiders, right? And now it's like, it doesn't fucking matter because I don't care what they do. And remember, once again, it has been programmed to distract you from mm-hmm. focusing on what can I do? Well, where can I look at better? You will always find bullshit if you look for bullshit. And there's plenty of bullshit around.
Oh, there's no shortage of it.
But there's also no shortage of opportunities either.
Exactly.
It just really depends on where you look and how you focus. And one of the reasons that I love traveling around the globe is so many fucking opportunities everywhere. It's insane, right?
Everywhere. No, it's amazing. It's amazing. But again, that's a mindset of being open to what's out there. And it's a tough switch for people to make, but it can be done. It can be done.
Looking for what you want, not focusing on what you don't want. Mm-hmm. And remember, when you ask me about the mentor, it's the same shit. Look for what you want. Mm-hmm. Find somebody that you want. Think about the people that you hang, not you, Steve, but think about the people who you guys hang out with all the fucking time.
Right.
Do you like them? Your family members, your friends, your significant others, your fucking coworkers, because most of you motherfuckers spend more time with your coworkers than you do with your family. Do you like them? Can you stand them? Do they make you happier? Do they piss you the fuck off?
Are they a good influence?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is that's the influence that they're putting in you, and that's where your mind starts focusing most of the day. So if you spend most of your day at work and you hate where you work and you can't stand your fucking boss and you hate your fucking coworkers, what type of shit are you focusing in all day long? Which is then going to continue. And honestly, that was one of the most valuable things that my mentor taught me, is that the reason why you continue to get the shit that you don't want is because you're constantly focusing on that. That's also the law of attraction.
Right.
The law of attraction isn't just like, oh, I'm going to put nice shit on a vision board and look at it and then it's going to fucking happen. The law of attraction states that you get what you think about most of the time.
That's straight Earl Nightingale shit right there.
Yep. Goddamn right. For most people, they only focus on the bad, or primarily focus on the bad. When you look at the amount of time that you spend throughout the day, and this is where I'm really trying to break it down as easy as I could, for it's a very complicated subject, but just as easy as I possibly could.
That if you just look at it like your energy goes, your energy flows where your focus goes.
Where your attention goes, energy flows, and results show.
Yep. So let me ask you this. When you're talking about kind of unfucking all those things from our past, there's a lot of different ways that people will or can go about that. One of my personal favorites, and I know one of yours as well, is the proper use of psychedelics.
Very much so.
So how – I know you do guided psychedelic journeys with groups of people. Tell me a little bit about that, because I've never been to one of yours. I mean, I'm a pretty experienced psychonaut overall, and you know, even just little stuff. Like, I recently had a really, really introspective mushroom trip when I was in Playa del Carmen last night. I was right sitting with my feet in the Caribbean. When the Caribbean, like you said about the Amazon, you don't have to be on anything to feel the power in certain areas in the world.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
There's just some areas that have them. Caribbean is one of those places. And I can always feel it. I always have. But when I was on the mushrooms, it's a whole nother experience. And it sounds, I'll just use this as an example. There's a lot of things that went on in that trip. But one of the things that I was, I didn't realize was screwing up my head. And this may sound trivial, but, you know, my dog Winston died.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, it was about a year ago, a little bit, Memorial Day, about a year ago. Very close with the dog. We went through a lot together, traveled together, everything. And I didn't realize, you know, like every time I thought about him, there was like almost like negative feeling, not negative feelings toward him, but feelings like, shit, I could have done better. You know, fuck, I could, you know, when he was sick, I could have been more patient, you know, all these different kinds of things. And I wasn't really focusing on that when I started the trip, but that's what came into focus. And I tell you what, put some definite thought into that, sitting there by the sea, and well, it's absolutely 100% clear after that. Like anytime I think about him now, it's just 100% happy, joyful, remembering the stuff that we were able to do together and all that kind of stuff. You know, and that's just one sort of example. People may think, oh, it's just a dog. But for me.
Well, to you, it was more than a dog. And, you know, to some people, it may be like, oh, your dad just called you stupid. Where to some other people, that's completely devastating emotionally. And there's a lot of things that happen in that scenario, but I really truly enjoy using psilocybin particularly more than most other psychedelics. And I've tried the, you know, I've done like shaman with DMT. I've done with the shaman and then I've done ayahuasca in Peru. I've tried with acid LSD, but really in my, for my personal experience and where I come from, I feel that the mushrooms just are better for me for that type of spiritual road that I go. So here's what I tell
people.
I'm
the exact same. I've tried just about all of them, and mushrooms are my go-to for a good quality spiritual experience, 100%.
Yes, and particularly certain, there are certain strains of mushrooms that I use particularly. There's one that I use specifically in my retreats because it's just really known for that spiritual type of connection. But the medicine doesn't cure you. The medicine just reveals to you what it is that you need to work on. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time, so remember what we talked about, the four steps. Step number one is being aware. Well, like I said, a lot of us are aware of a lot of our problems, but there's so many fucking more that you're not even aware of. And your mind is a tricky little bitch. So what it does is says like, oh, you go check out these problems here. Well, it's got this big old fucking problem right back here, but it doesn't want to fucking see you. And usually this big problem is a tons of problems. So anyway, when you are in that, you know, you're in that scenario, the medicine has a way of revealing the stuff that needs to be addressed at that moment. What's bothering you the most? Because the medicine, what it does is it elevates emotion that you feel. So this is why people use it like to go trip balls and, oh my God, the colors are so this, or that movie was so funny, or, you know, the grass was doing this and nature and stuff, because it accentuates what you feel normally. So like nature, you go out without being on shrooms and like it looks nice. When you go in shrooms, you're like, this is the nicest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life.
The tree is amazing.
The same thing happens with pain. The same thing happens with fear. The same thing happens with insecurity. The same thing happens with doubt and all of these other issues that we carry around as humans. So a lot of times when you're doing it in the right setting with the right mindset and the right intention, you're able to have the medicine basically, you know, that wasn't your intention to go in there and, you know, do the whole thing with the dog. It's just what was bothering you at the moment that the medicine kind of brought up. You know, it wasn't, I don't think you meditated and say, hey, I want to kind of clear this energy about my dog. It was just the medicine said, this is what you need to do. And this, what I, you know, what I enjoy about that is that it allows you to, when you're off the medicine, you remember everything that happened while you were on the medicine. So then you can address it. It's not like being drunk and then the next day you're like, oh, fuck, I don't remember what happened. I was so fucked up. Like, no, you remember the conversations that you have. You remember the feelings that you had. And now you're like, oh, fuck, you know, I've been holding on to this guilt or this whatever when it came to my dog. I can let go now. And now, as you said, when you're thinking about it, it's more joyful thoughts versus like, oh, I'm such an idiot. I should have.
Right. And yeah, like you said, I didn't. I didn't go into that particular experience with the idea, with the intention of like, okay, I gotta see what's going on with, you know, the emotions involving my dog or anything like that. It, you know, it was just one of those things that got revealed. I was actually looking for some other stuff that didn't ever really get brought up by the medicine in that particular experience.
That is I've been running these retreats for over 3.5 years now. The next one that I'm running is going to be my 10th retreat that I'm hosting. And, you know, I usually get about 12 people or so that show up to these things. So I've done a lot of fucking people. It's almost 100 people that I've guided through these retreats, are actually over 100 now. But anyway, I was going through there and I'm looking at all the stuff. And usually the people's biggest issue that they have there is they walk in with these expectations. Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to address this and I want to do this and I want to get over this thing or that person or this whatever. And I'm like, okay, that's cute. Because the medicine is going to reveal what you need. And very rarely is it going to reveal it in the way that you wanted or that you expected it.
Yep.
Because remember, if it would be like the way that you wanted and expected, it would fall into your comfort zone and you wouldn't do it anyway. We, exactly. Even if you meditate, even if you go to like a therapist, even in whatever the fuck you do, you once it hits a certain level of pain, you kind of stop yourself.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about the medicine is that it kind of removes that inhibition and that control to be able to stop yourself, and you let yourself go into your emotions. So mm-hmm. It could be laughter. It could be, like I said, it could be crying. It could be feelings of guilt and insecurity, feelings of you're the fucking shit, motherfucker. Like, hell yeah. All these things could potentially come out, and they need to come out. They need to come out. They need to come out. So that's why I'm a huge, huge advocate of it.
You said they need to come out, because when I first started using mushrooms specifically for spiritual experiences, I was trying to guide the experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, I'm in control, and I'm like you said, I'm gonna fix this, and I would have my little list. I want to work on this, and I want to address this, and then after you do that a couple times, you realize that shit ain't. You aren't in control.
Yeah.
Of exactly what you're going to be shown. So now, anytime I have a psychedelic experience, I give myself to the experience to see, okay, what she has to show me or what is going to be revealed about me. You know, Give myself more to the experience and see what comes of it, and trusting that the medicine will show me what I need to be shown.
And when you go through that experience, the roughest part for people is trying to control the experience. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever had mushrooms in the past and you've had a bad trip, basically what happened is that you started freaking out, meaning that you started feeling that loss of control, the mind stuff, and then you started freaking out. And remember that the medicine just enhances your emotions. So if you're fucking scared and freaked out, and it's just going to go even more, which is why, and most people don't know how to snap out of it. Which is why I started hosting my retreats, because I've had a lot of people that say, hey, man, I want to do this. I've seen the studies. I've seen the research, you know, the Johns Hopkins, the Harvard University, all the other stuff that has been published here within the last 10 years showing the benefits of psilocybin when it comes to depression and overcoming traumas and connecting neurons in your brain, repairing the neurons in your brain. Like, there's a lot of things that happen, but people are afraid that they're going to freak out.
Right.
So that's where having the guided person there is good to have, make sure that, hey, you know, if you start kind of going down that direction, we can always pull you out of that and let's get you back. Because really what it is just you start freaking out about, oh, shit, I don't have control. I'm like, I don't like this. It needs to stop. And, you know, once you start that ride, you're not getting off for 5 hours, 6 hours.
Yeah, exactly. But at that particular time, that last time, it was a couple months ago, I had a friend of mine. She came with me, and she'd never done it before. So I was guiding her. That's why I took a light amount. But it's strange, because I still had those revelations, but still was able to guide her, and I was telling her the same thing. You know, if you start to feel that, then, you know, hey, let me know, because I can guide you out of that. You know.
Yeah. But, and that's the thing, is like, it's hard for you to guide yourself when you're in your mind, when you're going through that process, because part of the medicine is that it, you do kind of lose some of that control of that inhibition.
Right.
So it's a good thing overall, but it scares the fuck out of people. Okay. However, though, when you have somebody there from an external source, they're able to really guide you. So, which is why you need to make sure that you're in the right setting. You know, you can't take mushrooms in a crowded fucking club and think you're going to have some type of spiritual experience. You know, it's going to, most of the time for most people, they find it very uncomfortable because now it's just like all these people around them and blah, blah, blah. And
you, yeah, once again, you're picking up. I don't like a lot of people. I don't like a lot of people around me. I just don't.
No. And I, most of the time, you know, it's a very personal experience because you're, once again, you're putting your emotions out there. So if you are thinking of doing that, and you don't come to a retreat like mine's, definitely have a sitter there who is going to be watching you in case you do start freaking out, that they can kind of calm you down and refocus you on something else. And then the medicine will, you know, that will blow over and then you'll get another revelation, another thing. But remember that those things usually come, the things that are shown, the things that you're reminded are going to be uncomfortable for you. Yep. They're going to, it's not going to be pleasant for that time. But just like Steve was saying, you know, he didn't realize that he even had this problem, that he was kind of blaming himself and kind of, you know, doing all this stuff about the dog. But after the medicine showed him like, yo, you're doing this. And he's like, oh shit. Now he's able to switch it up. And now when he thinks about the dog, it's like smiles and good memories versus like, oh fuck, I should have done something different. And the medicine is very, very good for that.
Now, do you take people like, guided sessions, are they open for people if they want to enroll?
Yeah. So, you know, I would have to interview you first, but I do open them up to the public per se, meaning that anybody can apply, but we definitely, you know, I don't approve everybody.
Right.
I have to make sure that we're, you know, that everybody is good and they're coming in there with the right intention. And, you know, when you're going there, you're going to be very vulnerable emotionally and stuff like that. So I want to make sure that we're in the right setting with the right people to do it. But yeah, it's the people can enroll in there. You know what? I've curated this because I've been doing this for so long. I've curated a whole weekend experience. We leave on Thursday from Phoenix and we drive up to Sedona. We have a cookout, you know, kind of meetup thing where we get to know each other, kind of get comfortable because the next day is the day of the ceremony. So we start off by meditating and setting our intentions and what we want to do. I have a hypnotherapist that comes and does a group session with us to kind of calm us down and get some of our, those intentions deeper in the subconscious. Then I have a sound healer who does a group session for about an hour, kind of getting us relaxed, getting our body ready, getting our mind ready for the journey that we're about to go in. We take the medicine after that and we're kind of out for, you know, like I said, 5-6 hours or so. I have a few girls that help me out and kind of keep up an eye with me. So I have, it's like 4 or 5 people kind of watching everybody around. And then on Saturday, it's integration day where we take the, all the information that the medicine taught you and how are we going to actually apply it. And we have all the hypnotherapy, the sound therapy. I have a lady who's a quantum shaman and I have a massage therapist and you just set up private appointments with them throughout there. And they'll, you know, they'll give you that as a way to kind of incorporate, particularly the hypnotherapist and the quantum shaman. Those are really, really good ways to kind of talk about what happened the day before and really start integrating them. So it's a whole weekend type thing. You know, we ended off on Sunday by hiking the vortex and meditating up there and catching the sunrise as a way to kind of recharge our energy from such a purge that happened over the weekend. And yeah, it's a amazing experience for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. So if somebody wanted to get in touch with you and possibly take a look at going to one of your retreats, how would they do that?
I think the easiest way to get a hold of me would be through Instagram at Cashflow Creator. It's just easier for people to do. If you are watching the video of this and you see my name, the way that it's spelled down there, then you can always add me or follow me on Facebook, but I'm just not going to try to explain that on audio. But at Cashflow Creator, that is the easiest way to get a hold of me there. Just follow me. I'm promoting the next retreat that I'm hosting September 7th through the 10th, 2023. So I'm doing that at this particular moment. But yeah, that's how you can get a hold of me. Let me know. I usually do 3 to 4 of these a year.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I think here in the near future, I want to incorporate one of them out of the country. I was thinking of taking people down to Guatemala. That's where, you know, my family's from. Yeah. I've done group trips to Guatemala before. And Guatemala, especially around this lake, Lake Atitlan, it's really known for its spirituality. And so I'm thinking I might just host one out there.
That would be very cool. That would be really cool, actually. So I might keep that in mind and keep an eye on your Instagram if you decide to do that.
Yeah, please feel free to let me know. And, you know, if any way that any of this information was good for you, was useful for you, was able to really encourage you in any way, please send me a message. I love hearing that stuff. As I said, I really want you guys to be successful. You know, I really want you, if you take the information that I shared here with you and you really listen to it and you apply it, I promise you that I don't care where you're at right now in life, you can use that information to better yourself. Whatever bettering yourself means to you, you can use that information. And I really, really hope that you do. And if you do and it works out for you, let me know.
Yeah. Give them a follow at Cashflow Creator. I'll make sure I put it on the screen. And BP, I really appreciate it, man. That was some really good, powerful stuff that I think people can use. And that's the thing, you know, it's for me, it's all about the practicality of the information. It's not some wave your magic wand and, you know, like that, you know, the secret and all that.
Yeah, kind of and stuff. It's a different way of thinking. Like the, you know, you said the Ronin mindset, it's a different way of thinking. It's going against the grain.
Yeah.
And most people, when you deal with 99% of the people out there, they're not going to tell you stop focusing on the negative. They're not going to tell you to find the answers within yourself and really start making those changes internally and start doing, don't focus on the big shit. Don't focus on the end goal. Just focus on getting 1% better every single day, just a little tiny bit better. Like those are those information that you can actually use in real life that is goes against the grain of most of the shit that we've been taught most of our fucking life.
100%. Well, brother, I appreciate you. Hopefully it's not too hot there in Phoenix. Because you guys have been getting your ass kicked there, huh?
Hotter than the devil's nutsack right now, bro. You know, with as much as I travel, I'm hardly ever in Phoenix for the summer. And the first summer that I'm here, I've been here most of the summer. It's been fucking hot as shit.
I know everybody that I know from there that I'm in touch with is like, holy shit, they're in Vegas just getting their ass kicked.
Yeah, but you know, like honestly, you don't really go outside. You stay inside of the air conditioning. It would be worse if I lived in Minnesota and it was the fucking winter time. I will take the 120, whatever the fuck, versus a 10 feet of snow and a shovel. Fuck all that.
Any day of the week. That's why I do not live there. I got out when I was 17. And when I go back and try and visit my family, I try and do it in the summertime.
God damn right.
Oh, that's way too much. Way too much. Well, it is... Shoot, I don't know. What time is it here? It's about 1:30. Yeah. 1:30. So I'm gonna be exploring the mountains of northern Thailand this weekend. So right now,
nice.
That's another thing I didn't think through when I was doing the mobile podcast was most of the people I talk to are gonna be in the States more than likely. So most of the podcasts I do are probably gonna be midnight, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I thought about that when I was thinking of actually living in because I still want to go start some businesses in Uganda, but I was thinking of living there. I had met a few gorgeous women out there, and one of them we were talking about that, and so I thought about it, but then that was kind of like the big kicker is that fuck, it's gonna be 14-15 hour difference, you know, it's always gonna be my classes that I'm doing. So I'm actually, hey, real quickly, bro. Last time I had hit you up, I ended up not being able to follow up. But you were living in Playa del Carmen for a while, and what's the visa situation out there as an American to go live in Mexico or whatever?
Well, I spent about 6 out of the last 10 years in Playa del Carmen. So, what I did. And it seems to work unless they've changed things radically, which I don't think they have. But basically, when you go into Mexico, you've got 180 days, 6 months. And then all you got to do is get out and you can go back for another 6 months. And okay. You don't have to be out for any particular length of time. You know, I was visiting family or going to the States for something every 6 months anyway. So it was never a big deal to me. The one time that, you know, my tourist visa was coming up and I hadn't been out, I just, you know, I jumped a plane from Cancun to Fort Lauderdale. It was like a hour and 10 minute flight, hung out in Fort Lauderdale for the weekend, partied, had a few drinks, met some people, and then went back to Playa. So
cool.
It's very easy. They like having Americans down there, obviously.
Yeah.
And I like Playa. I mean, you've got that whole Riviera Maya, the Caribbean, like we talked about, is
I've been before. I probably wouldn't live in Cancun, and I definitely wouldn't live in Tulum.
Nope.
So I thought about Playa, and that's why I had hit you up. So I ended up meeting a girl that I've been talking to down in Brazil. That's why I'm fucking going back here. Like, of course, right?
All right.
So I've been on the way out of the U.S. for a while, bro.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for like some of the shit that I recently went through, it kind of just, you know, took more attention than I wanted to. But anyway, so I was talking to the girl and I said, look, I don't really want to move down to fucking Brazil. I don't really want to bring your ass to the U.S. either. Because I don't want you Americanized. And she speaks Spanish. So she lived in Colombia for a few years. So
okay.
I was like, if you'd be open to living in Latin America, obviously if it works out and whatever, right?
Yeah.
So because initially, bro, I wanted to go live down in fucking the DR, in Dominican Republic.
Right.
But I figured if I'm living in the DR, bro, there's going to be way too much fucking temptation. Like me personally, I'm not, you know, I'm not big on Guatemalan or Mexican women that much. So
I think in the DR, you would be sorely tempted, my friend.
I've been to the DR a few times already, bro. Like I already know. And it's not only like the women, you know, they're my liking on the dark skin or whatever, but their culture is just so free flowing and they're just so flirty. And so, bro, it would give me in trouble. So anyway, that's what I was thinking of, Mexico or Guatemala or somewhere where it wouldn't be. Cause I thought about Colombia, but then I'm like, fuck Colombia, fucking temptations out the ass over there.
Yeah. Colombia is a tough one for a guy if you've got a girl. So
you know, bro, Playa, I'm telling you.
Playa is, I love Playa cause it's got, you've got the Caribbean. It's not too big. It's not like a crazy city like Cancun. If you get a place in the central, you know, you can walk pretty much everywhere. It's not Tulum. Tulum is congested and crazy rich New York hippies. It's just, I don't really vibe with that. But Playa is a good choice. And it's so close to the U.S. It's in a time zone that's manageable if you're doing business in the U.S. And
what time zone? Is it like Texas time? Or?
I think it bounces between Central and Eastern.
Okay.
So, you know, it's on the US time zones, and you know, the infrastructure's there. You've got the internet, your cell phone works. It's really easy. It's Mexico, but it's Mexico light, you know?
Yeah. What were you paying for a apartment out there?
That's changed a lot too. The pandemic fucked everybody, because before, for $1,000 a month, you could get a penthouse, like just live fantastic for $1,000 a month in rent. When I was back there, I had a nice apartment. Don't get me wrong. It was new, brand new building, security, you know, the whole thing, and a 2-bedroom, pretty good size. And when I went down there, I was paying about $1,600 a month. And it was like just shocking to me. Cause like, you know, the only country that was really open during the pandemic was Mexico. So yeah, everybody Mexico. Went there.
They were wide open.
Yeah. So everybody went there. So every American, Canadian, European, everybody is trying to go there. So rents went through the roof. So, you know, not that $1,600 a month is absolutely crazy, but it's way higher than it was. And then by the time I left, when I left in March, I believe in March or April, one of those two, with the exchange rate, it had kind of floated up to about $1,800 a month.
Okay.
So, but you can find stuff a lot cheaper than that too. That was a pretty nice place, you know, rooftop pool and pretty new and everything like that. I mean, you can definitely find stuff for that.
How far were you walking distance to the beach from that?
Oh yeah, I was like 4 blocks from the beach.
Yeah, because dude, I have this love affair with the fucking Caribbean.
Yeah,
and honestly, that was another reason why I like the DR, just because it's in the Caribbean. Like, I just have really awesome experiences and memories in and around the fucking Caribbean.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be close to the Caribbean as possible.
The Caribbean's amazing, and there's so much stuff. And you spent some time down near Playa, it sounds like. So you just know there's so much stuff to do down there, from cenotes, or you can go to Cozumel or Isla Mujeres. You can go to Holbox. I mean, there's just islands. There's just so much stuff to do around there. It's an amazing place. I like it.
No, I really liked it down there. One of my mentors lives, or he had a house in Mérida, which is at the big city up there. So yeah, that's where I went in, and I really enjoyed the culture. I enjoyed the people. They're a different type of Mexican than the Mexicans that we deal with up here, just because of the region that they're from. The ones in the south are normally cooler.
Funny thing about Mérida, that is one of the safest cities, not just in Mexico, but in the world, because all of the various cartels, they keep their families there. So it's off limits for any violence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. My mentor told me that when we were there, and he lived in a gated community up there, and he said that some of the people in that gated community were the wives and the mothers of, you know, some of the big cartel bosses or whatever the fuck.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, he told me the same thing. And when I was there, because I spent a few days in Mérida, one of the neighbors came over and he was telling them how some young punks had came into the city and were, like, trying to start something. And then they ended up fucking dead in the desert, like, 2 days later or something.
Don't even try, man. That is a no-go zone. So it's
he mentioned that's where they send the fucking the things.
And you know, just about 30 minutes outside of Mérida is Progreso. Have you been out that way?
Yeah, fuck yeah, bro. Progreso is awesome. That's where I spend when I was in Mérida. That's where I spend most of my time.
Okay,
it's small enough to not be like annoying. But they have to have enough shit because the cruise ships come. So like it's got enough shit to do, but it's not overbearing. Yeah, I like Progreso.
Progreso's and you can get beachfront lots there for still pretty cheap. Not cheap like they were before the pandemic. Like you could get a $30,000 beach lot for lot in 2019. After the pandemic, things changed, but it's still you get a beachfront for a lot. Last time I checked, for $60,000-$70,000, I think.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. I like that area actually.
Yeah,
and I made friends with one of the waiters. I asked him what he paid for rent, and he was paying about $100 a month for a furbished studio with water and electric. Now I want to say this was like 16 or something like that.
Okay, yeah,
it was a little while ago, but definitely.
Yeah, it's a good area, man. Well, let me know if you end up out there, because I don't know where I'm gonna end up, but that's always a possibility because I do like it there.
If everything goes as planned, because the reason why I'm going back here in August is she's turning 30 on the 19th or whatever, right?
Okay.
So I'm gonna go hang out with her for a few weeks, and we've been going at it ever since I came back. So nice. I was like, yeah, if everything kind of goes, we'll spend some time, and if everything goes like I've been wanting, I'm still gonna keep this place here that I have in Phoenix, but I've been wanting to get the fuck out of the States for a while, bro. Like it's just. It's toxic. Yeah, like I like making my money here, but I don't want to spend too much time. I still got my kids and shit, so I'll be back here from time to time. And that's what I was thinking. Like in Guatemala, it's 3 months. Every 3 months, you got to leave. And now you're telling me Mexico is every 6 months. So
yeah, Mexico's 6 months. And it's the cool thing about living in Mexico, and it's almost like you're free. You don't realize the weight that's on you with everything that's going on, the division, the politics, everything that's going on. And you don't have that as much down there. I mean, you're hanging around in an expat community, you're going to get a little bit of it. But, you know, one of my buddies, he's British, and he does reputation management and search engine optimization and stuff. So every once in a while, he has to have his VPN on US IP addresses. Uh-huh. And he's like, I was on YouTube for 20 fucking minutes on the US IPN. And he's like, I don't know how you put up with it. He's like, I was almost scared shitless by the time I got done watching YouTube for 20 minutes based out of the US. I had to shut my VPN off. He's like, that is the most hateful, toxic shit ever.
Bro, you're preaching to the choir. And I was already kind of leaning that way before it started getting as bad as it's becoming. But yeah, now that it's continuing down, I'm just like, yeah, I need to go. And honestly, right now I'm setting everything up to work remotely with all the real estate shit that I do.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll be, so if it all works out, then if I decide to go to Mexico, I'll let you know. But right now I'm kind of in between Mexico and Guatemala because I got family out there. So
right. And Brazil, because sounds like you got a girl out there. So,
well, she's going to be coming with me because I'm not, the thing I like Brazil was nice and whatever, but it's 14 hours away, bro. It's like going to fucking Thailand, you know? So if I have to come back home for something, like, it's going to be a pain in the dick and just going through everything. So nah, Central America, Mexico, that's good.
Dude, it's so easy. You're out of the U.S., but, dude, if you need to go back or something, it's there. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's still relatively, you know, it's still relatively inexpensive in life. And I'm, she grew up in the fucking Amazon, bro. Like, she's a super simple, cool chick. So, we'll be able to do whatever the fuck we want.
Dude,
all right, brother. Well, yes, you have a good night, man. I will definitely hit you up if I end up going to Mexico.
All right.
But yeah.